They counted the votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election. Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington, D.C., that the government does not want you to know. And as you heard by that opening music, today is Election Tuesday. Every Tuesday here at the Inside Scoop is Election Tuesday until that most important Tuesday, November 2nd, when hopefully we do as the song says and kick out the Republicans this fall. And I got a really terrific guest for you today. His name is Terry Holt. He's the national spokesman for the Bush-Cheney 04 campaign. And he's quite courageous to come in and debate me on the air. I plan to ask him a lot of difficult questions about the Bush campaign, specifically about the negative ads they've been running against John Kerry. You know, here on Election Tuesday, we discuss all the issues that we can discuss relating to the elections. It could be the Bush campaign, the Kerry campaign, congressional campaigns, polls, issues, candidates, all you need to make up your mind to decide who you're going to vote for on November 2nd. Now, my bias is clear. My bias is expressed in the song by Donnie Daly, Kick Out the Republicans. It's all there. But I want you to help make your decision. And we've had lots of people on the show. We've had people from the Republican National Committee, the Democratic National Committee. We've had people from the Kerry campaign, even from the Nader campaign come on the show. I guess it's only fair that I invite someone from the Bush campaign to come on air and talk with us about their campaign. And I think it's very brave of them to agree to come on air. Now, Terry Holt is supposed to call in any moment. He hasn't called in yet. I don't know whether I scared him away, because I talked in detail with his communications director about what I wanted to talk with him about here on the Inside Scoop. What I wanted to talk with him about is the negative ads that George Bush is running against John Kerry. A recent article in the Washington Post tallied up the ads. And out of 60,000 odd ads that the Bush campaign has run against Kerry, almost 50,000, or more than 75% of them, are negative ads attacking Kerry. Now, compare that to the Kerry campaign. Out of their 50,000 odd ads, about a quarter attacked Bush. The other three quarters were positive. So why is it that the Kerry campaign is running three quarters positive ads, one quarter negative ads against Bush, and the Bush campaign is doing most of their time, three quarters of the time, attacking John Kerry? Well, as we know, an election, particularly one on an incumbent president, the election is a referendum on whether or not that president is doing a good job. That's how we decide most of those elections. And, of course, this election is no different. What are people talking about? They're talking about the Bush administration. It's understandable. The Bush administration and how they failed to create jobs, in fact, how they've lost jobs during the last 4 years for Americans. The Bush administration, how they got us into this war in Iraq. Listen to people like Ahmed Chalabi, who's an Iranian agent, to convince us to go to war against Iran's greatest foe and perhaps create a theology state, a theologic state, a theocracy, like Iran, where the Shiites rule, as we appear to be doing in Iraq right now. And so people are focusing, understandably, on George Bush. They want to know whether he's been a good president. Now, when you have a good president, when you have a president that's quite popular, and this is whether it's Republican or Democratic, this is true in the Reagan campaign of 1984 and the Clinton campaign of 1996. When you have a successful president, Republican or Democratic, and I'm not defending Ronald Reagan, I'm just saying he was popular in 1984. When a president is popular, they don't even mention the opponent. Ronald Reagan barely mentioned Walter Mondale. Bill Clinton barely mentioned Bob Dole. The opponents weren't important. The reason why they weren't important is because people supported these presidents. They understood that these presidents had done a good job, or at least most of them felt so. Again, that doesn't mean I'm supporting Reagan, just that he was popular. They thought he was doing a good job, and so these incumbent presidents focused on what they had done in the first 4 years and asked for four more years. You know, you almost never hear the Bush campaign say those magical words, four more years. You never really hear it at all. Instead, they're going around attacking John Kerry, and they're trying to show John Kerry to be some sort of flip-flopper. What they're doing is they're taking all of John Kerry's votes, and you got to remember, this guy's been in the Senate for more than 20 years, okay? And what they're doing is they're trying to find a vote here, a vote there, a way to attack John Kerry. And I want you to listen as I debate Terry Holt, which I expect to do in just a few minutes, Listen to how he takes votes out of context. And let me just sort of give you the warning before he gets on the air. Let me explain. And I think most of you understand this. I don't think I'm explaining to most of you. But just keep in mind how votes work in the Senate. A senator is not president of the United States. A senator doesn't unilaterally do anything. The way the Senate works is they vote on bills that other senators propose, that other senators amend. And frankly, when you're in the minority, as the Democrats have been much of the time in the Senate, when you're in the minority, you don't even get to decide what legislation comes to the floor. You have to vote on the package as it is. So, for example, when it comes to the Patriot Act, and I expect Terry Holt to bring that up. You just watch and see if he does. I won't mention it. See if he mentions it. When it comes to the Patriot Act, I'll be the first to tell you that there's good and bad in it. And I think a lot of liberals and conservatives, maybe because they like sound bites, maybe because they like simplicity, they overstate the Patriot Act. You find conservatives saying, oh, the Patriot Act is all good. It's got to be renewed. It's really helping us in the fight against terrorism. And you find liberals saying the Patriot Act is all bad. We've got to repeal it. It's a horrible thing. Well, let me tell you, as someone who has worked on the Patriot Act, I actually wrote 5 of its 200 pages. And my 5 pages, just so you know, before you start attacking me, my 5 pages said if the Patriot Act is misused, then you can sue the government. What my 5 pages did is basically said that if they disclose information about you when it's not a criminal proceeding or a terrorist proceeding or an immigration proceeding, you can sue the government and get damages. So that's what my 5 pages did. But the point is, I worked heavily on the Patriot Act. Those of us on the House Judiciary Committee, in fact, worked diligently, Democrats and Republicans. We worked together to get a good, solid Patriot Act, and we worked on the Judiciary Committee. And in fact, the Judiciary Committee, in its first version, voted the act out unanimously. That's right, everyone, from Maxine Waters on the far left to Bob Barr on the far right, every one of them worked together, and we agreed unanimously that this was the right mixture to be used to really defend the country and still protect our freedoms. Well, that act came to the floor, and Bush didn't like it, or John Ashcroft didn't like it. One of them didn't like it. They substituted the act for the one that actually became the Patriot Act. So just as an example, this Patriot Act, which actually John Kerry voted for, had good parts and bad parts to it. Let's be very clear on that. It had some good parts. One of the things the Patriot Act did, in fact, was to help lower the barrier between sharing information between the CIA and the FBI, and that was a good thing. That's definitely a good thing. But one of the bad things it does is it allows people to read your library books. It allows people to look over your shoulder and read your emails, even if you're not concerned with a terrorist act. We Democrats said if you're going to violate people's privacy, at least look and see whether they're involved in terrorism. We shouldn't violate people's privacy if they're looking at porn on the internet or if they're trying to smoke pot. Those crimes are not big enough and important enough to violate these American freedoms. So it has good in it and it has bad in it. Well, the Republicans have used that fact to really attack John Kerry. John Kerry has said, in fact, that while he supported the good stuff in the Patriot Act, he didn't like the bad stuff in the Patriot Act. So the Republicans are saying, aha, Kerry's flip-flopping. He wants it both ways. But the answer is John Kerry didn't have a chance to vote only on the good parts of the Patriot Act and not on the bad parts. It was presented as a package. He could only vote for it or against it. And if you watch, every time they do ads on Kerry, they're going to manipulate a vote. They're going to use a vote to show how, hey, you know, John Kerry supported something and then he was against something without noting the fact that these bills have hundreds of pages, you know, hundreds of provisions, and you can't just vote for just one. Indeed, only the President of the United States has the power to unilaterally make policy. So let me see now if I've got Terry Holt on the line. Terry, are you there? I may have lost him. I assume he will come back on shortly. But I want to see. Terry, are you there? Nope. We're going to have, as I said, the spokesman, Terry Holt, for the Bush-Cheney 04 campaign is going to come on the line and debate with me this election Tuesday about these ads. He's going to be back here right after the commercial. You won't want to miss it. And, hey, if you want to call in early. This is your chance to challenge the national spokesman for the Bush campaign. The chance doesn't happen very often. Here's your chance to call in, and if you call in early, you're more likely to get a chance to challenge him. After all, he's not going to be on for the entire hour. So call in 877 877-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Here's your chance to challenge the Bush campaign. And hey, if you're a conservative, and I know Ben listens and Jeremy from Kansas, and you want to challenge me, call in too. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be back with the national spokesman for the Bush campaign, Terry Holt, right after this.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A new report from Human Rights Watch accuses the Coca-Cola company of profiting off child labor in El Salvador. The report details the widespread use of children in the sugarcane fields of that country. Up to 30,000 kids as young as 8 are involved in the backbreaking work of planting and harvesting, for which they are paid little and receive no medical care when injured. Coke drinks are made from the sugar processed from the cane, but the company does not own or deal directly with the plantations. Human Rights Watch hopes the company will use its power and influence to force Salvadoran cane farmers to comply with labor law, which in El Salvador sets the minimum working age at 14.
After contract negotiations fell through, more than 1,500 members of the United Auto Workers Local 997 walked off the job on Thursday at two local Maytag plants in Newton, Iowa. Maytag's corporate headquarters is based in Newton and employs 10% of the city's residents, now out of work due to the strike. At issue is healthcare retirement benefits and Maytag's proposal to continue massive layoffs, downsizing hundreds of salaried employees as part of a national corporate restructuring program, in addition to the 1,300 people laid off in the past year and a half. Maytag announced that it knew the work stoppage was coming and built up a surplus inventory. Local president Pat Tweed speaking from the picket line at the plant gate.
Maytag and UAW were a valuable part of this community, and, you know, we're a majority of what this community is about as far as the commerce and people spending money and buying houses, cars.
Workers are hoping for a speedy resolution, unlike the last major strike at the Newton plant in 1971 that lasted for 5 months.
Victory for banana workers in Colombia. A two-week strike of 16,000 at plantations there ended yesterday when the growers agreed to allow farm workers to remain employees. They'd gone on strike to protest a proposal that would have classified them as seasonal workers and made them more susceptible to hiring and firing at the whim of a plantation owner. Banana planters and pickers will also receive wage increases, including adjustments for inflation. This staves off a potential shortage, as Colombia is the third largest exporter of bananas in the world.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A recent report by the U.S. Department of Labor suggests that more jobs are lost due to domestic competition than to workers overseas. According to the Labor Department, of the 200,000-plus jobs lost in the first quarter of 2004, only about 4,600, or 2%, were due to offshore outsourcing. But the report didn't include small-scale layoffs in its numbers and relied on management to accurately self-report their figures.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
But Bush and the Republicans could take the rejection. They counted the votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election.
Welcome back to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington, D.C. the government does not want you to know. Today is Election Tuesday, and today we are debating members of the Bush campaign. In fact, it looks like they've done a switch on me. It's going to be the press secretary for the Bush campaign, Scott Standel, who's going to be discussing the ads that the Bush campaign is running, that the Kerry campaign is running. Are they fair? Are they too negative? And you can join in this conversation. All you have to do is dial in 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Hey, Scott, you there on the line?
I sure am.
Okay,
thanks,
terrific. No, listen, I appreciate your coming here on the show. I told your communications director that you're kind of walking in the lion's den here because as tough as I am, I think some of my callers are even tougher. But I appreciate you being willing to come on the air and take us on.
You bet.
Okay.
Happy to.
Well, let me ask you this question first. You must be aware of the Washington Post article that, in fact, both campaigns have confirmed is accurate. which shows that some 75%, three-quarters, of all Bush ads run are negative ads against John Kerry, whereas John Kerry, only about one-quarter of his ads are negative against Bush. Since an election is often a referendum on the incumbent, it's a challenge as to whether the incumbent has done a good job or not. Doesn't the Bush campaign go a negative against Kerry this early, which seems to be unparalleled in modern American political history? Doesn't it show that George Bush is really worried about his own record?
No, actually what it shows is, and I would dispute the notion of that article, which is comparing apples to oranges, because they didn't take into account that the very first campaign ad that John Kerry ran back in September was a negative ad attacking President Bush. And what we saw throughout the entire primary process was sometimes nine candidates attacking President Bush. And when you combine all the negative ads run by Senator Kerry's campaign with the unprecedented influx of this soft money from liberal third-party groups, you know, they have far outspent this campaign.
But you're not disputing the fact that three-quarters of the Bush campaign's ads are anti-Kerry and only one-quarter of the Kerry campaign ads are anti-Bush. You're not disputing that fact, are you?
I am disputing that fact. And because what they didn't take into account was all of the ads that John Kerry ran during the primary process, which were overwhelmingly negative.
Okay, but since then he's been three-quarters positive. Let me deal with Bush's campaign. Most incumbents, I mean, I know that Bill Clinton in 1996, certainly Ronald Reagan in 1984, even George Bush Sr. in 92, focus on their accomplishments. Ronald Reagan used to say, you know, four more years. We haven't heard much four more years chanting in Bush rallies. Why is it that Bush has gone so negative so early?
Well, you apparently haven't been at many Bush rallies.
I haven't. I admit that.
That is definitely the chant that is occurring all throughout the country. You know, we have over 500,000 volunteers. We have over 1 million contributors to this campaign. And we are actually this week focused very much on the president's accomplishments in office, whether it's aggressively fighting the war on terror or making sure that we continue to strengthen an economy that is already strong.
But you still haven't answered my question. I mean, and these are not just the Washington Post, but professors, a number of universities are saying that the three-quarters figure that Bush has done, the negative ads, is higher than in 2000, 96, 92, and 88. There has never been an election since these things have been recorded in modern American political history where the incumbent has gone this negative this early. And I'm just trying to, is this an accident? Did he accidentally go negative? Or is there a reason why three-quarters of his ads not Kerry and only one-quarter praise Bush?
Well, certainly the people have a view of President Bush's leadership. They have witnessed the strength with which he has led this country over the last 3.5 years, and their views of him are very formed. What we have seen during the primary process was not only the attacks on President Bush, but the distortions that Senator Kerry made of his own record. So what we are doing is setting the record straight, not only about those attacks on President Bush, but about his characterization of his 19-year record in the Senate.
Well, let's talk about setting the record straight, because there are a number of things that Bush has said that are just patently not true. You have, in fact, Bush claims that Kerry said that the 150,000 U.S. troops are universally responsible for the torture at Abu Ghraib prison, but he never said that. They say that Kerry said that we should defer to the United Nations. The United Nations should control U.S. policy. Kerry didn't say that. He said we need to try to get the U.N. involved, but he never said the U.N. would control U.S. troops. You've said Kerry said he'd raise taxes by $900 billion. Kerry didn't say that. Tell me, I mean, what are these charges? How come you're misstating the truth here?
Well, let's start with the $900 billion.
Okay.
I mean, Kerry has announced a health care plan
right. That
he himself has indicated cost $900 billion.
Okay, but he didn't say he'd raise taxes by $900 billion.
He has also said that he would not increase the deficit.
Right. He's also said that he would raise taxes on the wealthy, the 2% that make over $200,000, and lower taxes for the 98% that don't make that much money.
Which would get you how much? Would get you about $250 billion. So if we are to accept Kerry's word that he is going to implement this health care program and not increase the deficit, he is going to need to raise taxes beyond just that small percentage that he has indicated he would.
Well, I mean, that's quite a jump. I mean, I think you'd agree that George Bush has said he's going to cut the deficit in half by the end of his next term. If he were to do that, then I guess we should say George Bush plans to raise taxes by hundreds of billions of dollars, because that's the only way you can cut the deficit.
No, that is not correct. We are growing the economy, and we will maintain government spending, unlike Senator Kerry's campaign, which is advocated over $2 trillion in new spending.
Yeah, but Scott, all we have to do is take your same rhetoric and turn it backwards. If the economy is going to grow, and by the way, I think there's well reason to believe that Kerry's plans will grow the economy much more. As I've argued on this program, it's the middle class and the lower middle class are the engines of this economy, not the super rich. Giving them tax cuts will actually grow the economy much more, I argue, than the upper classes. If the economy grows, then guess what? Kerry won't have to raise taxes by $900 billion to pay for his plans. Aren't you having it both ways?
No, what we are pointing out is the fact that Senator Kerry has advocated tax increases over his entire career. Every time he's given a chance to vote on eliminating the death tax or increasing the child tax credit, he opposes those sense reforms.
Let's talk about those common sense reforms. Eliminating the death tax, which it's very interesting, the Republicans decided about 20 years ago to start calling the estate tax the death tax, because they really wanted to make it a negative thing. The estate tax, as most out there know, is something that says that if you earn millions and millions and millions of dollars and you bequeath it to your heirs, the question is, should they have to pay taxes on it? Let me give you a clear example. Anna Nicole Smith, a young woman who has a nice body, one might say, married an 80-something-year-old billionaire, and he died a year or so later, and he bequeathed her hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, Republicans believe that Anna Nicole Smith, having earned her money, I guess by sleeping with that guy, by having earned that money, she shouldn't have to pay a lick of taxes, but somebody who's struggling to pay two jobs, to feed their families, to pay the rent, that their Social Security taxes, their Medicare taxes shouldn't be cut one iota. Why is Anna Nicole Smith more deserving of tax relief than a waitress slash secretary struggling to do two jobs who makes $20,000 a year?
The president believes that all Americans who pay taxes deserve tax relief.
Not those who pay Social Security taxes.
Let's talk about the death tax.
Okay, but Scott,
on a farm.
Okay.
My father passed away about 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We have spent years with attorneys to make sure that estate planning allows my father to pass our farm onto me my brother and sister.
Is the farm worth more than $6 million?
Say that again?
Is the farm worth more than $6 million? You must know.
I'm not going to tell you how much my farm is worth,
but you must know that
my father, who has built up a farm for his entire life, inherited that farm from his father, who inherited it from his father, should be able to pass that down to his children?
Without paying taxes? If it's worth $1 billion?
Taxes.
No way.
Taxes have been paid.
Now, look. The Democrats had a plan. You must know this. They had a plan, an amendment to the estate tax bill that would have said $6 million can pass free under tax. Later on, when the Republicans rejected that, my favorite bill in Congress got almost no press. Senator Russ Feingold said, all right, we'll allow $100 million tax free. And if your farm's worth more than $100 million, you know, I got to say, Scott, your dad's got a huge farm. It must be the size of Nebraska. They said $100 million could pass tax free. But people like Anna Nicole Smith, who without working at all, get hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, would have to pay taxes on it. The Republicans voted no. And I got to tell you, Scott, when you said that George Bush believes every American who pays taxes should get a decrease in taxes, what about those who pay Social Security tax, which, after all, everybody who has a job working for somebody has to pay? Those taxes you don't advocate decreasing, do you?
Well, those people are paying into a Social Security system that will support their retirement.
Except George Bush spent all the money in that Social Security system. Right? I mean, the Social Security surplus is gone.
The president, which brings us to another interesting point, the Democrats yesterday saying we don't need to reform Social Security. We believe we do. We know that the system is going to go bankrupt. And without significant reform, people are going to have to pay higher taxes or have decreased benefits. That's why the president believes we need to reform the system.
Well, I don't know what his reform means, but I know Bill Clinton's solution, one that I liked 4 years ago, and that was use the massive surpluses that we had then, the highest surpluses in American history, to pay down to protect the solvency of Social Security. Oops, those surpluses are gone now. But listen, I want to give my callers a chance to take you on. I can't have the sole enjoyment of doing it. I want them to have a chance. The number's 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Here's your chance to take on the Bush campaign. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Scott Stendel, the press secretary for the Bush campaign. What's your first name and where are you from?
Yes, this is Gordon from Michigan.
Hi, Gordon from Michigan. What's your comment or question or challenge?
Yeah, in watching the Bush ad so far, I've come up with a rule of thumb, and it seems that everything that the Bush ads accuse Kerry of, Bush is generally guilty of.
Give me some examples.
Well, Bush accuses Kerry of being weak on defense, and I can't imagine anybody other than Bush being weaker than defense and dropping his pants in the face of 9/11 and doing nothing, having a needless war in Iraq, which is draining the economy, and not getting Al-Qaeda, who are true proven enemies.
Well, let me address this to Scott. Scott, I mean, you're accusing Kerry of being weak on defense, and yet Osama bin Laden seems to be growing stronger right there in Afghanistan as we divert troops from that effort to the war in Iraq. How do you answer that charge?
Two-thirds of the top leadership of Al-Qaeda has been captured or killed, and the president has been very aggressively fighting terror. And
well, you say he's aggressively fighting it, but how do you...
As they emerge. Because the caller talks about a needless war in Iraq. Well, we had the convergence in Iraq of a dictator who had attacked his neighbors, who had a weapons of mass destruction program.
Well, he did. You still argue that.
Well, this has been proven to be false.
This is amazing. You still argue? You think Bush is going to go into the 2004 election arguing that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction still?
He used them on his own people.
Look,
do you
okay.
dispute that?
No, I don't dispute that Ronald
okay,
Reagan.
Then he
well, no, hold on.
People.
I don't. Wait. No. You can't just. No. Wait a minute.
The people in Iraq better off with Saddam Hussein in power?
Hang on, Scott. I don't dispute. You can't just take that and go on. I don't dispute that under Ronald Reagan, that Don Rumsfeld and others shook Saddam Hussein's hand, supported him, that Ronald Reagan encouraged American companies to give him chemical weapons with which he massacred the Kurds. I don't dispute that. I do, however, dispute that he had them in 2002, given that the UN inspections, the Gulf War, and frankly the work of Bill Clinton in bombing those facilities got rid of them. Yes, he had them, but you're not really arguing he had them in 2002, are you?
I am arguing that the entire world community, the intelligence of not only this country, but the entire world community agreed that he was a threat.
He was a threat.
The judgment for America
made by President Bush about his weapons of mass destruction programs were made by other intelligence agencies, were also made by Congress, and were also made by President Bill Clinton.
Hey, Scott, is Saudi...
He made regime change the policy of this country in 1998.
Scott, is Saudi Arabia, Iran, and North Korea also a threat?
The president has worked to address threats in many different ways.
Yeah, but he only invaded Iraq.
Bringing together an international coalition of
countries of us and
in
Britain.
The region of North Korea to address the nuclear threat that they pose is one way of dealing with the threat.
Can you agree with me that...
We had a dictator in Iraq who flouted the will of the international community for many years.
Scott, do you agree with me that North Korea's nuclear program and Iran's nuclear program are far more well along than Iraq's ever was?
I agree with you that they currently have programs that are a threat in their region.
Yeah.
I certainly do.
I do, and I think that if you want to deal with weapons of mass destruction, that's where you have to go first. Hey, Gordon, one last word, then I'm going to go to a commercial break.
Well, his argument makes my point because he is in complete denial of reality, and that's the kind of thing that's not going to win over the purple people in this election.
The purple people? Who are the purple
people? Well, the people who aren't blue or red.
Oh, I see. Okay, the purple people. Hey, Gordon, thanks very much for your call. I appreciate it. Scott, thanks for coming in and taking
Thank
the challenge.
You very much.
I want you to stick around a little bit, though, if you could, after the break. We've got to go to a commercial break right now. But when we come back, you're going to have your chance to challenge Scott as you wish. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, this Election Tuesday, as we do our best, at least on my scale, to kick out the Republicans. We'll be back right after these messages.
Have you been chipped yet? A company called Applied Digital Solutions wants you to undergo a surgical procedure to implant a tiny RFID microchip in your arm. Why would you want to do this? Because radio frequency ID chips will eliminate the heavy burden of having to carry credit cards and remember your ATM numbers. Instead, your arm becomes your card and ID number. Simply run your arm under a scanner, and your embedded radio chip sends a digital signal to the computer, allowing you to complete your transaction.
I enjoyed the debate.
ADS calls its microchip VeriPay.
Goodbye.
There's only one rational reason that ADS executives think we'll submit to this. They're insane. Insane, but serious. They insist that this technological leap is needed because many people lose their credit cards. VeriPay solves that problem, says a corporate PR flack, cheerfully noting that ADS's chip is subdermal and very difficult to lose. You don't leave it sitting in the back seat of a taxi, he said. Subdermal or not, your ID number still can be stolen by a geeky thief who rigs up a device to intercept your radio-transmitted number, then plays it back later to your ATM machine, emptying your account. If your number is stolen, or if you simply switch credit card companies or banks, what are you to do? No problem, says the PR guy. If you don't want it anymore, you can go to a doctor and have it removed. I call it an opt-out feature, he said gaily. Swell. Instead of simply calling your credit card company to cancel your card, you'd have to call a surgeon. This is progress. Still, ADS is banking on you to get chipped, as they cheerily put it, even offering a $50 discount to the first 100,000 people who sign up. This is Jim Hightower saying, by the way, the honchos of ADS are such business geniuses that the company's stock plummeted from $12 a share 3 years ago to about 40 cents today. I wouldn't entrust two bits to them, much less my arm.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
In the year 2000, the Democrats won the election, but Bush and the Republicans couldn't take the rejection. They counted the votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election.
Welcome back to Election Tuesday here on the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're discussing the Bush-Kerry campaign as we do every Tuesday from now until November 2nd, when hopefully everyone hearing the sound of my voice is already registered to vote and you will cast your ballots. And I hope you cast your ballots, a pure Democratic slate for John Kerry and the Democrats. It's time to kick out the Republicans. They have made a huge mess. My guest was Scott Standel. He's the press secretary for the Bush campaign. He was a last-minute a last-minute change from the national spokesman, Terry Holt, who they said was going to come on my show. I don't know whether he just got it too bad or what. You know, I don't think most radio hosts challenge the Bush campaign in the way that, that I do, or that my callers do, my intrepid callers, people like Gordon from Michigan. I don't think they're used to hearing such strong disagreement. They're good at giving a few sound bites, but when you challenge them on the sound bites, they have nothing to say. I mean, he said, Scott says, every American, George Bush believes every American should have a tax cut. That's just false. There are lots and lots of lower middle class people who don't pay much in income taxes, but pay a heck of a lot in Social Security taxes and Medicare taxes. George Bush doesn't want to cut those. As you know, if you make more than $80,000 a year, any more dollars you make, you don't pay a penny in Social Security tax. You don't pay any Medicare tax. It's just not a tax that rich people pay. George Bush doesn't want to cut those taxes because those are taxes funded by the engines of the economy, lower and middle class people. He just wants to cut taxes that Anna Nicole Smith has to pay. You heard, the first tax Scott went to defend is the death tax, as he called it. Of course, it's the estate tax. It's the tax that you get for doing nothing. The tax that you get for doing absolutely nothing, for just inheriting money. And I don't think Scott's dad's family farm is worth more than $100 million. I'd be very surprised to hear if it is. Hey, if you want to call in and comment, please do. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Have you seen the Bush ads? Have you seen the Kerry ads? Do you have a theory as to why Bush is going so negative so soon? I'll tell you, he's gone now. I tried to get him to stay. I tried to, you know, I'll tell you something. When I go on a program, and I do lots of radio shows. In fact, every Tuesday in Albuquerque, I'm on air with a conservative host who I disagree with. I've had Fox News call. I've gone on lots of places where the host and I disagree. I'd like to stay on as long as possible. I like to get my point across and really see what they have to bring at me. Bring it on, I say. Well, I think we find that our conservative friends, our people at the Bush campaign, they don't want to be on very long with people who disagree with them. They just want people who agree with them. And it's understandable because it's very hard for them to defend. Again, the numbers are 877-57-SCOOP or send an email to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. I want to read some of the claims that Bush has made that seem to be referring to Kerry, but in fact, Kerry never said. And just so you know, if you're purple people, I kind of like that, Gordon. I may start using that. If the purple people come up to you, those 10 to 20% of Americans, really very few of us, who've not yet made a decision of who they're going to vote for on November 2nd, if the purple people come up to you and say any of these things, you will be ready to respond. Bush said, at Louisiana State University, he said, "It may seem generous and open-minded to say that everybody on every moral issue is equally right, but that attitude can also be an excuse for sidestepping life's most important questions." Well, that's really interesting, George Bush. What an interesting straw man you bring up. Someone that says that everybody on every moral issue is equally right. I don't know who you're talking about. You're not talking about John Kerry. You're not talking about any Democrat that I know of. I don't know anyone that says that everyone on every moral issue is equally right. So, sure, you can shout down a straw man. Listen to some of these other straw men. Bush said, some say, well, maybe the recession should have been deeper. Really? I don't know anybody saying that. Oh, yes, the recession should have been deeper. So, again, he's bringing these straw men. One of the things he said about John Kerry is John Kerry would ask the United Nations permission before the United States could defend security. Really? Because John Kerry has said he never, ever said that. He said, sure, he'd like to go to the UN. He'd like to, as Bill Clinton put it, get international support first, and if that fails, then go it alone. But he never said, ask the UN permission before we defend our security. So these lies come again and again and again, and I don't know, do you think anyone believes it? Are any purple people actually buying these lies? John Kerry isn't saying these things, but Bush says Kerry says them, and that's, I guess, why 75% of his ads are negative. Hey, caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name and where are you from?
Tony Glover from Washington, D.C.
Hey, Tony from Washington, D.C. Did you hear the first part of the broadcast?
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you think he was just running and hiding? And I don't know. What do you think of my guess?
It sounds so defensive.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like just dripping out of the sides of his mouth. I said, I wanted to call earlier and say, why do I have a receipt for a stick of gum, but I can't get a decent voting record?
That is a great question, and I wish he'd been on. I'll tell you, I think it was kind of like pulling a scab. It's like he knew that if he didn't come on my program, I was going to attack them mercilessly because we've had the Kerry campaign, the Nader campaign. He knew I was going to attack him, so they came on my show. He came late, and then he got out early.
Well, he was listening. You know that.
Well, yeah. I suspect so. But that's a great question. As you know, I've focused on that a lot, specifically on Congressman Rush Holt's bill to have a paper record. You know, one of the interesting articles I read on that recently is that the slot machines in Vegas have paper records. They record every single pull to make sure that it's – and then it goes to the Nevada Game Commission, and they make sure that it's fair. So if you put a nickel in a slot machine, you are more likely to get a fair result than if you vote for President of the United States. Now, I'm not attacking the Nevada Game Commission. Right. I'm just saying, don't you Republicans think that voting is at least as important as gambling?
Or a stick of gum.
Or a stick of gum. I mean, right, or anything else.
Ask them to go to any company, since we're supposed to be so corporate endowed,
right,
and even go to the delays thing in New York and not get a receipt for your ticket.
Right.
Just give the money and just walk in.
Right.
So ask them those basic corporate questions. I'm just want to hear what they got.
You know what's funny? I have never heard any Republican defend it. I got to tell you, I have been working for months now, ever since I had Congressman Rush Holt on my show talking about that bill that it would require a paper record. I have been trying very hard to get Republicans who disagree, and after all, they are the majority. I have contacted more than 7 congressional offices, including all on the committee that won't let that go through committee. I've contacted the Maryland Secretary of State, who's a Republican, who is supposed to be the foremost person against it. None of them will come on my show, and I think the reason is they can't defend it. But I got to tell you, Tony, I'm going to keep trying.
Please.
I am trying because I would love to just hear what comes out of their mouth when they argue that, oh, it's too expensive to spend a few million dollars. We mean hundreds of billions in Iraq. It's too expensive to spend a few million dollars for American democracy. Tony?
Wait a minute, one more question.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm going to renew my efforts based on your call, I promise.
And then also, what about the contract? I know you got some information on the Halliburton contract.
Right.
Or did you just throw the money away?
Well, actually, I'm going to do a show on that, too. Apparently, there's been $8 billion wasted. And I want to talk about that. But, you know, again, a few hundred million is too expensive for democracy. We're just going to give it all to Cheney's corporation.
He's speaking the truth, brother.
Hey, thanks, Tony. Thanks for listening. Keep being a regular listener and caller, all right?
Thank you.
All right, caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your comment or question?
Hi, Mark. It's Rod from New York.
Hey, Rod from New York. You're one of my favorites. Hey, you called in when I was on Air America on Sunday spoke highly of my show.
I posted to the blog and telling them they should have you on every week.
Rod, let me tell you, I appreciate it. If you and more of my listeners would call Air America, you know, I might be on regularly there soon enough. I appreciate that. I really do. What's your comment?
My comment is I know why the Bush ads are so negative, and it suits their agenda, because if the fewer voters that actually come out, the more that are disgusted and just don't vote, it serves Bush's campaign, Karl Rove's, methods.
Right. I think he's trying to say, look, I know you're not going to vote for me because I've been an awful president, but maybe, just maybe, I can convince you to also not vote at all. Don't vote for John Kerry, or maybe vote for Nader. And I think you're absolutely right. I got to tell you, I was at a family reunion over the weekend. I got a real large extended family. And some of that's working. I virtually no one there was going to vote for Bush, but there were a few people who were planning not to vote, and I was arguing strenuously with them, of course. And some of it may be because of the negative ads against Kerry. I really hope that Kerry, and I think he will. I think when we get into the convention period, most Americans aren't watching the election. They're not political junkies like you and me. I think they're really not watching it carefully. After the convention, after Kerry has a chance to really define himself before everyone, I think we'll see some of these non-voters decrease. But I think you're absolutely right, Rod. I think that what they're trying to do, they know people won't vote for Bush, so they're trying to convince them not to vote at all. I think you're right.
Cheers.
Yeah, anything else?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here. I just don't know if you have one more comment, because we got to go to commercial break.
No. I just... Once again, a great show, and I'm sorry that guy got off the hook so fast.
You know, I can't force them to stay on the phone. I really, you know, if I had some of those torture devices like they had at Abu Ghraib, I would handcuff him to the phone, you know, and make him stay there or else, you know, join the pile of naked men. But I don't have that power. I don't torture people like Don Rumsfeld. I wish I did, because I think he got in for the minimum amount and got out as quickly as he possibly could. He knew when he was beat. But, hey, Rod, thanks for listening in. And
cheers.
Thanks for that call on Air America. I'm going to try to go back there again.
I won't. I'm not stopping.
All right.
Okay.
We're going to go to commercial break. When we come back, we got a little bit more time to talk more about your calls. And then I want to tell you a little bit about tomorrow's show, where I'm going to have a really incredible reporter on. His name is John Gorenfeld. And he's going to talk about a coronation that occurred in the Senate office building. A coronation? We have kings and queens in America? Apparently we do. Yes, a crown was brought to Reverend Sun Myung Moon, we'll talk about it more tomorrow. He's sort of a crazy South Korean billionaire that has a whole unification church and millions of Moonies who support him. He was crowned the Messiah in a Senate office building, believe it or not, with lots of members of Congress in the room. Mostly Republicans, but yes, even a few Democrats. We're going to talk about that tomorrow. But for the next 15 minutes, we still got time to talk about Bush ads, Kerry ads, And what'd you think of my guest, Scott Stendel? More on Election Tuesday and your calls, 877-57-SCOOP, or email to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be back.
Bush says he cares about the middle class, but the giant corporations get all the cash. We got a $500 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.
If a thief broke into your home and stole a couple of thousand dollars that you had carefully saved from your paychecks and stashed away over the last 3 years, you could call the cops and try to get your money back. But who do you call when that thief is the CEO of your company? CEOs have been routinely stealing hundreds and even thousands of dollars from the deserved paychecks of each and every worker in America, pocketing much of this loot themselves and converting the rest to corporate profits. The grand larceny of the CEOs is that they've been filching every worker's share of the enormous productivity gains that America has racked up since the recession officially ended in November of 2001. Productivity is the increase in products or services that each worker churns out, and Americans have been phenomenal at this, fueling an explosion of new economic growth. The theory and promise of free enterprise is that if our workforce of millions of people becomes more productive, the workers will enjoy the bulk of economic gains generated by their improved output. Yet in this current 3-year burst of productivity, America has lost jobs and wages have either stagnated or fallen. In other words, America's working families are being fleeced by the pinstripe thieves sitting atop corporate headquarters. Workers' share of the new income they've generated in this recovery is the lowest ever recorded, while the fat cats have hauled off the most on record. An in-depth analysis by the Center for Labor Market Studies at Northeastern University finds that while the workforce usually is rewarded with 65% of the increase in national income, this time they've received only 38%. Profits, which go overwhelmingly to only a few investor elites, usually get under 18% of the productivity increase, but now they're getting more than double that. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is a massive historic level of theft. And the pinstripe dandies pulling it off ought to be wearing prison stripes.
Toyota owners, roll into summer with great tire service offers at your participating Toyota dealer. And keep rolling all year long with free gas from Toyota. That's right, Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer, where you get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter the sweepstakes.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com/owners.
This report is sponsored by Pfizer and Viagra, sildenafil citrate. You've seen the signs as they leave the doctor's office. The spring in the step, the look of relief, spontaneous whistling. The technical term for this condition is, what took so long-itis? In layman's terms, it's what happens when you finally ask your doctor about Viagra. To experience the skipping, whistling, and sense of relief, ask your doctor about Viagra and if a free sample is right for you. To learn more, go to Viagra.com.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine, your host on this Election Tuesday, as we do our best to do, as Donnie Daly's song says, and kick out the Republicans. And I want to welcome all my listeners. I hope you heard our discussion with Scott Stendel, the press secretary for the Bush campaign. He came on late and left quick. I don't think he could handle the questions. But, hey, that's what we do on the Inside Scoop. We scare away the Republicans, you know, and if they're afraid of us, all it shows is, hey, you know, they can't really take a good debate. I want to welcome, of course, all my Radio Power listeners. We're heard every day and Sunday on radiopower.org. And, of course, that is a website that is entirely supported by your donations. I hope you will take the chance, if you're listening on Radio Power, and give a donation. That is how we keep it on the air. And, frankly, it's not just my show, but a number of other good shows. People like Tom Hartman and Tony Trupiano and others are able to broadcast on the web because of the efforts of Radio Power. Do your part. Give a contribution. It will help out. Listen, I've been talking about the Bush ads, and like I said, the Bush press secretary ran away when I noted that lie after lie after lie they keep telling. In fact, the only lie he would deal with was where they claimed that, that Kerry would raise $900 billion in, excuse me, $900 million? Billion. I think he said, yeah, they said $1 billion in taxes. And he admitted that Kerry never said anything of the sort. He just said, well, Kerry says they have a, he has a health care plan, and Kerry said he's not going to run a deficit, and that the health care plan will cost $900 billion. Now listen to how the logic of the Bushies work. He said, Kerry says he's going to spend $900 billion more on health care. He said he wants a balanced budget, and therefore he must raise taxes by $900 billion. So I turned it around on him. I said, well, Scott, what about Bush's claim that he's going to cut the deficit in half, and won't he then raise taxes? He said, no, Bush will grow the economy. So I turned it around again, and I said, well, wait a minute. If the economy is going to grow, and there's lots of evidence that Kerry's plans would grow the economy far more than Bush's, then Kerry wouldn't have to raise $900 billion in taxes, would he? Couldn't answer that question. You see how they do that? You see, Bush won't have to pay for his programs because the economy will grow. But Kerry has to pay for his because the economy will remain stagnant. And all of that is said as his justification for an ad that said, and I quote, all the ad said was, in Kerry's first 100 days in office, Kerry would raise taxes by at least $900 billion. Really? In his first 100 days in office? That is an outright lie. Let's look at some more of these things. He's argued that Kerry supports a gasoline tax. Now, I have argued on this program, frankly, that I support a gasoline tax, but it's inaccurate with regard to John Kerry. 10 years ago, Kerry proposed a gasoline tax, but he hasn't supported it ever since. The claim that Kerry said that all of our troops are responsible for the Abu Ghraib tortures, Kerry never said that. He's been upset about the tortures, as I have, as most of us are, but he never said that. There's a whole host of things. And again, if we're going to affect the purple people, as my caller Gordon put it, the people that are neither red nor blue, that haven't decided on the election, we have to let people know the truth about John Kerry. And we have to ask ourselves, why is it that the Bush campaign is going so negative so early? The reason has to be that they don't think their candidate has done a very good job. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. And I want to read an email from Chris in Canada. I'll tell you, I've been really excited about the number of international listeners that have joined us here on the Inside Scoop. If you look at the blog, which is on www.radioinsidescoop.com, you'll notice that it's not just Americans that have been posting. We have posts from Canada, Taiwan, England, France, the Netherlands, and Switzerland so far. If you're listening internationally, please add to my countries list. I like to cite more countries. But Chris from Canada writes as follows. Chris writes, I think it's apparent to everyone that most Republicans don't really know anything about Kerry or pretend not to know. I also think that most of the most vocal cons know even less about Bush. It's either that or they're blatantly lying. It sometimes seems like these guys know less about American politics than I do, and I'm Canadian, for God's sake. Keep up the good work. I listen every day. Take care. Well, thank you, Chris. And I think you're right. If you notice, the Republicans, I've seen like Tucker Carlson do this on Crossfire, or he'll say, well, what's Kerry's position? Nobody knows Kerry's position. Well, somebody's not reading the campaign literature. You go to johnkerry.com, you can find his position on just about anything. Kerry has been stating his position. What's his position on Iraq? He's made it clear. Get the international community involved. And with a new president who hasn't lied to the international community, I think that's quite possible. Kerry's made his positions very clear, but the Republicans are trying to make people think that he doesn't have a position. Interestingly, Kerry has far more positions and nuanced positions than Bush does. Bush is very much the simple black and white stuff, whereas Kerry, I think to his credit, though he's being attacked for it, gives long answers to explain because he understands, as any intelligent person does, that the issues involved aren't simple. They're not black and white. There are some complications. And he goes in, he explains them. He explained, for example, how he likes part of the Patriot Act, but he doesn't like part of the Patriot Act. I should tell you that I'm of the same position. I also think some of it's good and a lot of it's awful. My boss, Barney Frank, voted against the Patriot Act, but he also recognized that some of it was good and a lot of it was bad. And you don't get the chance when you vote. You don't get the chance to pick and choose. You know, it's all one bill, and That's what they're doing. I'll tell you, another thing they're doing is they're attacking Kerry for eliminating weapon systems, where Dick Cheney voted to eliminate the same weapon systems. They're saying, you may have heard the Republicans say, oh, Kerry wanted a $1 billion cut in the intelligence budget back in the 90s. That's true. Kerry did propose such a cut. But the Republican Congress, the Republican-led Congress, cut it by almost $4 billion. So almost three times, actually, what Kerry's proposed budget cut was. And, of course, that was not gutting the intelligence service. That was less than 1% of the intelligence budget. So they're going to throw around numbers. But when you look at the numbers behind the numbers, you find out that it's all false. I'll give you one more example, really, that was one of the most insidious examples. Vice President Cheney, and he's really taken a leader at being the bad guy here, being the guy who's just lying about Kerry back and forth. Cheney said in a speech in Arkansas, he said, Senator Kerry, this is a direct quote, Senator Kerry has questioned whether the war on terror is really a war at all. Cheney said, Kerry said, quote, I don't want to use that terminology. So again, let me read the full quote. It's a little complicated because Cheney is quoting Kerry. I'm going to read it again. This is fully Cheney. Senator Kerry has questioned whether the war on terror is really a war at all. Kerry said, quote, I don't want to use that terminology. In his view, opposing terrorism is far less of a military operation and more of a law enforcement operation. Okay, that's what Cheney said. But Kerry didn't say that at all. In fact, Cheney attributed a quote to Kerry that had nothing to do with the war on terror. Okay, what happened is Kerry was talking about economic transformation in the Middle East, and he said, I don't want to use that terminology. Which is, you know, far different issue, economic transformation of the Middle East. Kerry said, I don't want to use that terminology. But Cheney said that Kerry used that language with the war on terror. And I know that's technical, and I know that you folks get it, but I also know that when you're listening to spin and you're listening to sound bites on your evening news, that most people aren't getting it. They might even look up Kerry's quote. He did say, I don't want to use that terminology. He did say that. It just didn't have anything to do with the war on terror. So it's you know, a good manipulator uses a little bit of grain of truth and mixes it in with a lot of lies. And that's what the Bush administration is. They are good manipulators. And I'll tell you, one of the worst things I've heard them say about Kerry, and I really wish that Scott Stendel, the Bush press secretary, had stayed on for the full hour, because I would have bombarded him with all of these examples. But that's okay. I'll tell you, and you can let the purple people know. Let the people know who haven't decided whether to vote for Kerry or Bush. One of the worst things that the Bush campaign has said about John Kerry is they've charged that Kerry led the fight against creating the Department of Homeland Security. Led the fight. Well, hey, I was there. All right. I was working on the committee, the House committee that oversaw Homeland Security. I know exactly what happened. The answer is, I guess it's not a surprise, that Bush led the fight against the Department of Homeland Security. And that's a fact, folks. You can look that up. Just look at articles, any article, between September 2001 and the summer of 2002. Senator Joe Lieberman proposed the Department of Homeland Security, and Bush opposed it across the board. He was against it completely. Then, right before the election of 2002, Bush changed his mind and said he'd support the department as long as they took away all workers' rights. Didn't want workers to have the rights to be whistleblowers, like Sybil Edmonds, who I had on my show yesterday. Didn't want workers to be able to complain about defects in our security, Homeland Security. And so he pushed the bill through the Republican Congress without worker rights. Kerry, who supported the department, said, nope, you know, I think we need worker rights. It's not just good for workers, but it helps our country. And that's what he opposed. But again, Bush is trying to make it simple and trying to hope that you don't understand it. And I got to tell you, one of the things I like to do here on the Inside Scoop, and I do think it differs it from other radio shows, is we like to give you the facts. Give you the facts, let you decide. This is a fact-based show. You know, there are other shows that go on and they make jokes about Bush. I make some jokes too. But in essence, I want to give you the facts, fact after fact after fact. So if anyone comes to you and says, well, Kerry was against, you know, in our intelligence, and Kerry was against the Department of Homeland Security, and Kerry wants to raise taxes $900 billion, you have the facts so that you can say it's not true. Mark said it's not true. And if you don't believe Mark, I can look it up on the Internet. I can prove it. I can look it up in the Washington Post, the New York Times. And if ever you want to go and find out what I said on a show – don't hesitate to use my archive, www.radioinsidescoop.com. Go to the broadcast archive, choose a show of your choosing, and a show that interests you, and you'll get the facts, and hey, that's what we provide here on the Inside Scoop, not just here on Election Tuesdays, but every day of the week. And you won't want to miss tomorrow's show on the nefarious connection between Republicans and the self-proclaimed Messiah, Reverend Sun Myung Moon. That's tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And one last favor I have to ask. If you like the Inside Scoop, do me a favor. Don't keep it a secret. This is Mark Levine signing off.